Hi, my name's Dennis. I'm an alcoholic. And a drag queen. And I came about this close to being in drag tonight, but I thought, that might be a little too much. Because I'd probably be all melted away by now. I've been sitting back there with this piece of tissue, wringing it. I brought up the drag queen part because there's several stories in my story about doing drag. And when I grew up in a small town here in Nevada, my parents were divorced when I was about 2 months old. My mother moved herself and my two older brothers to Winnemucca. You ever heard that name before, you people from out of town? Where my grandparents lived. And my mother remarried, and we moved out to McDermott, to a ranch. At this point in my life, my mother had let my hair grow down to my shoulders. I was a platinum blonde. And tended to dress me up in little girl's clothes every once in a while when she wanted to entertain the neighbors or thought it was cute. She let me do it for 4 or 5 years until she realized that I was really enjoying it. And I was about 12 years old and she caught me in her second wedding dress, which fit like a glove. Oof. The pumps, too. Powder blue. With a little pillbox hat. Powder blue eyeshadow. Little pink lipstick. And I think right about that time she realized that I was a bit different than the rest of her sons. She asked me, it was so funny how she said, "You're just going through a phase, right?" And I said, no, I don't think so. So she took me to our family doctor. And my family doctor asked me a few questions like, "Do you like playing with girls or do you like playing with boys?" And I said, "Well, I like both." And he says, "Well, why do you like to dress up?" And I said, "Because it's fun." And he says, "Oh, okay." And so we talked to my mother again, and he says, "Oh, he's just going through a phase. He'll be fine. He'll snap out of it." Years went on, and I kind of hid my drag tendencies, because at that point in my life, I realized that whatever it was I was doing, it wasn't right. It wasn't the norm. So, excuse me. You're very dry up here. I'm used to having a spotlight, and the light's a little dimmer, and this is really not my good side because back to my story. I got into high school and in this small town that I grew up in, drinking was quite a pastime for high school kids. And I really looked forward to it, to being in high school and to party with all the big boys and whatever else came along. I probably drank the very first time when my parents were out of town. A neighbor friend of mine and I got a gallon of Burgundy wine, and I lived out on a ranch about 10 miles out of McDermott. So it was quite a little drive into town. And we drove into town, and we stopped at a swimming hole and went swimming and got drunk enough to play around with each other. And then drove into town and proceeded to just go crazy and ran into some other friends and drank. I ended up drinking probably half of this gallon of wine myself and hadn't eaten all day. But I knew I was at least smart enough to realize that I had to get home before my parents got back home. So about 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night, it was just getting dark. My friend decided he better drive. So we made it home to the turnoff, which is a mile of gravel road to my parents' house. And I started getting sick because the road was so windy. Well, if you've ever seen what the regurgitation of red wine looks like, he'd stop on the side of the road, I'd get out, I'd do my thing, I'd get back in the car, we'd go about another 100 yards, I'd get sick again, I'd get out, and I'd do my thing, and I'd get back in the car, and this process went on until we got to my parents' driveway. At this point, all I remember after this is my parents coming home and me going, "Whew, I didn't get caught." They went to bed. They got up the next morning. Well, my bedroom was in the basement of the house. My dad came down to wake me up. And he says, "What stinks down here?" Well, I had gotten sick again in my bed, and instead of getting up and taking the sheets off, I switched the sheets around to the bottom of the bed and went back to bed, thinking, well, nobody will see it. That day was filled with regular ranch work, haying and whatnot. And my dad realized that I had been drinking the night before. Well, he didn't say anything about it to my mom. We went to the farm to get all the haying of the day, and I was just thirsty, as I am right now. Probably drank another gallon of water to replace all the wine that I went through the night before. And got back home that afternoon, and I can remember my mother saying, besides all of the, "You dumb shit, why did you do this? You're grounded, blah, 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 blah." She said, the whole funny part of it was, she said, "I thought there was an awful lot of dead rabbits on the road last night." My mother, she was always had a wonderful sense of humor. This continued through high school, but I hid that from my parents, and as much as I possibly could, I went out and partied with the boys and the girls, and we did weekend parties. I was introduced to marijuana when I was a junior in high school, and I wasn't really crazy about it because it made me so fucking paranoid. And it, what was weird about it was we'd have to go to the store and pick up a couple of bags of Doritos in order to function. You know how you get that munchy stuff. We went to the stores, and we knew that when we walked in the door, everybody was looking at you. Everybody knew that you were smoking pot. High school days went pretty swiftly, and all this time I always knew that there was something different about me, but I didn't quite know what it was. I liked wearing dresses. I got out of high school in 74, and I wanted to come here to Reno to go to school, but my parents for some reason didn't want me to go that far away, and talked me into going to Elko, to the community college, for school. Well, I never know. I got to Elko and began partying and got crazy and wild and did drugs, and the party was on the whole time I was there. Um I didn't settle down. I didn't go to school. I dropped out of school and ended up moving back home per my parents' insistence. I lived back home for a while and decided that I needed to go someplace further away, and I moved to Southern California. Lived there for about a year, met my first lover there, and things seemed to be going pretty well. I had come out with my parents. It wasn't a pleasant experience, but nevertheless, I came out, or at least attempted to. I got to Southern California. Like I said, had a boyfriend there. We were together for about 8 months, which was a lifetime for me. But our relationship centered around drinking. He was a teacher. I was a waiter and a waitress. I was a waitress or a waiter. In a truck stop. And the drinking was the mainstay of our relationship. Drinking and smoking dope. Occasionally on weekends would do coke. My mother became ill in that same year and was terminal. And I decided that I should move back closer to home to be around her. My mother and I probably hated each other, but loved each other. We have this love-hate relationship that neither of my brothers or my younger sister even came close to having. So I moved back to McDermott. And the relationship was the plan was that we would get back together in a year or whenever my mother, it was obvious that my mother was going to die soon. So we planned to get back together again soon. And in the meantime, he had been transferred to Texas. We lost touch and never got back together again. I lived back at home until my mother passed away, and in 1980, I moved here to Reno, and I've been here ever since. The first thing I really noticed about Reno was the amount of bars there were for the amount of gay people there were. At that time when I moved to Reno, there was probably 12 gay bars. And the queens in this town had some fucking fun. It was a party town. Still is, I guess. But a lot of things have changed. I got real heavy into the bar scene when I first got here. Became Reno's welcome wagon. A title I really don't care to bring up, but I just did, didn't I? And continued to do so for quite a long time. I managed to keep jobs. I was at one job for 3 or 4 years as a chef, moved to another restaurant, was there for 2 or 3 more years, became a florist, and then did that up until last September. So drinking never screwed up my work life, but like Doug, I did partake in a few cocktails and a few lines at work. That it really is a big part of your day. Where was I? Oh, welcome wagon. Yes, welcome wagon. Well, I was just kind of a party animal, and in my drinking, well, the first October that I was here, that I had lived here, there's a thing called the closet ball, where people that have never been in drag come out as men, and then they're sent back, and they're given an hour with a sponsor to change into a woman. And there's several faces in this room that, well, at least one that I know was there. She was the runner-up. I won. In this fabulous I Dream of Jeannie costume with a ponytail coming out of the top of my head. It was quite stunning. And it probably began my days of drag in a real strong way, because being the star for one night and being the head queen for one night, it really did something to me. I wish I could be up here pantomiming instead of speaking live. Does anybody have any Shirley Bassey? My drag days and my drinking became very common occurrences if I wasn't working. Like I said, I never screwed up a job because of drinking or drugs or anything like that. I never got a DUI. I didn't have a car. And I have this one story that I really hate to tell, but I'm going to tell it tonight. One birthday, my birthday's in October, I decided that I was going to go out and drag. And I had this wonderful little spandex outfit, spandex pants and a little tube top, sequin tube top and a nice little a little oriental jacket. It was lovely. And I had my wig all combed out. I had planned this for a couple of days. But the only thing I didn't plan, and to take you back a little bit, when I did drag, I had to get drunk. I had to get drunk. So I bought a 12-pack of beer, and I went home, and I started getting ready, drink a beer, and put on some bass, and drink some more beer, and I lined my eyes, and well, I got completely made up, and went to put on my eyelashes, and I didn't have any eyelash glue. So I searched all over the house for eyelash glue, Elmer's glue. I tried Elmer's glue, but it didn't work. It kept falling off. The only thing I could find, and at this point I didn't give a fuck, was crazy glue. Said, go for it, girl. So I put them on, they stayed on all night long. In fact, the next morning when I stumbled home and went to take everything off, I had forgotten that I used crazy glue. Rip, rip. And I looked in the mirror, and I didn't have any eyelashes left on my eye of my own. But I had a good time. Do you know how embarrassing it is to have to go to work the next day and say, Dennis, what happened to your eyes? Something weird. Well, the oven blew up. Now I just tell him I shaved my eyebrows. There's that story, and there's another one, but I don't think I'm going to tell it tonight. My drinking progressed into a very I was to the point where I was drinking 4 to 5 days a week, sobering up, telling myself I would never do it again for 2 days, going right back at it. And then drugs came into my life. Drugs came into my life in a very big way. I started shooting up. I had lost all respect for myself at this point. I was hanging out in bars that, at one point in my life, were probably not acceptable places for me to hang out. The unacceptable became more acceptable. I was losing friends, not friends dying, they were dying, but people didn't want to be around me anymore. Like I said, I started hanging out in places where no one I knew hung out. Let's say 8 years ago. 8, almost 9 years ago, I decided, I was working for Margot's Lover, and I'm not going to tell any stories on Margot, but the drugs were there, and they were always available. And it's a bitch when your sponsor comes to the program and your connection comes to the program. You really can't go out because you don't know anybody anymore. I was doing drugs. I was abusing drugs. I wasn't even doing them. I just, for some reason, the things that I was hiding from, the emotions that I was trying to trap away and push away, were handled by drugs, I guess. But I went on a runner June of that year, and I woke up in one of the trashiest bars in this town, still is, I'm surprised it's still open, with no shirt on, a pair of pants that were filthy, and a pair of shoes on, long, stringy, greasy, dirty hair, and I asked the bartender to call me a cab. I got the cab, and I had the cab driver drive me to what was then Raleigh Hills, what's now Truckee Meadows Hospital, a treatment center, and tried to check myself in. Well, the job that I had, working in a gay bar, I didn't have any insurance, so they left me right out the door. I had to get my brother to come down, and he had to have me arrested so they could put me in protective custody. And I went through detox overnight. I woke up, and this was the county detox place. It was not pretty, let me tell you. And so I decided to go home and detox myself, which I did. And I kept calling back to see if there was an opening for the treatment program there. And a week later, I got accepted for the treatment program, and I went in. And I went in with the thought in mind that, well, I'm going to lose this job because this place is going to close down, and maybe we can just get a quick fix and get this all straightened out, and I'll be fine, and I'll quit doing the drugs. Because drinking's really not my problem. So I went through the 28 days of treatment, got a lot of stuff out, got a lot of stuff started on its way out. It planted the seed. My first AA meeting was there at the center, and it didn't really turn me on. For some reason, I didn't get it. I didn't feel it. I didn't want what they had. And at the point, at this point, AAA was very, very new here in Reno, and there was only like four, maybe five people. A couple of the people I did know that were in treatment, some of them are here tonight. I didn't want what they had. I didn't see anything that we had in common. I couldn't imagine living without drinking. So I played with the program for about 4 months. And after about 4 months, I went back out. Well, nothing had changed. It was still there. And I went right back into it, just as fierce and as I was before. And stayed out for about another year. In January of 1988, I was sitting at another gay bar in Reno on a Friday afternoon after work with my boss. And I'd been there probably 45 minutes, and he mentioned to me that I had already had 3 shots of tequila and 4 beers. And he says, "That's not normal drinking." And I says, "Well, I think you're right." And I put down my beer, and I knew that there was a meeting at Tomah Street at 8 o'clock. And I thought to myself, well, I might as well give it a try. I will give it one more try. So I walked into that meeting. Of course, it was a non-smoking meeting. I sat down, lit up a cigarette, and which they quickly told me to put it out. And there was only about 12 people there. And four I had probably drank with. I sat through that meeting, and a couple of people came up to me after the meeting and gave me their phone numbers and talked to me for a few minutes. And I don't know what it was. I don't think it was just that particular meeting or any particular meeting or any particular sign or anything, but I knew that if I had to ever clean up my life and get it in some sort of direction, that I should have to give AA a try. So I made a plan, and I kept this very secret to myself, that if by 6 months I don't have it and I don't like what's going on, I'll go back out. But I'm going to do what they say. I'm going to do what they tell me. So the first 6 months whizzed by. And I was out there on one of those proverbial pink clouds. And I don't know when it happened or what happened. I can't tell you how it happened. But I had a spiritual awakening. All the things that they say can happen, happened. Two years later, I was the chairman of the very first conference here. Well, actually, it was at the Sands Hotel. And I can't say that my program is is the program to follow. I do know what the basic steps are. I do know what's planned for us and how to go about the daily living of this program. I, on the other hand, from what Doug said, I was diagnosed with HIV in 88, about 6 months after I sobered up. And I didn't really want to talk about this tonight, so I'm not. But I'm glad that when I got tested and when I found out that I was positive, that I had this program to fall back on. It has taught me a new way of life. It's taught me that I don't have to hang out in those sleazy places anymore. That there is something that I have that other people want. Other people search for years and never find it. A very, very good friend of mine just passed away from alcohol poisoning. He never gave himself a chance to get the message. And it's a very sad way to go. But whatever time I have, wherever I'm going, whatever I'm going to do, at least I have accomplished this in my life. And this is what I have. I have fallen back on this program for more than just drinking issues, more than just emotional issues, and more than just my HIV issues. A lot of times I'll go days without even thinking about the program. But when times get the roughest and the shit seems so deep that you'll never get out of it, the program is always here. And all you have to do is pick up the phone, call someone, call your sponsor, or call someone in this program. Even if it's just contact with another AA person. Margot told you earlier that I do a lot of, like I said, do a lot of 12-step work out there. And I don't know that I actually sit people down and talk to them personally on a one-on-one basis. But I've had a lot of people come up to me and say they admire me so much because I can go to bars and put on functions and raise money for charities and not drink. And I said, well, I just don't drink anymore. How do you do it? Well, there's this program called AA. And I'm glad I found it. And I'm glad I'm here. And I hope if any of you got anything out of my babbling tonight, I told Margot I was going to keep this short. I know some people have traveled a long ways to get here. And I want to thank you all for coming. And this conference was a dream of mine 5 years ago. I didn't think, I was astounded when Margot asked me to speak. But nevertheless, I gladly said yes. And I want to thank everyone for being here, because without you, we're nowhere. Thank you.